And welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for December 2nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me late on a Saturday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm chilling, man.
Because it's freezing.
Because I forgot to put on the heater in this room, and I'll be darned if I'm going to do it now. So let's just roll, baby. Keep me warm.
Get it done. Yeah, get the blood pumping. Get the juices flowing. Well, yeah, I'm freezing as well. But, man, it has been so long that so much has happened. I don't know if we're going to be able to cover everything in our normal time. So we're going to go long. We're going long. I'm just going to predict that right now. It's going to be a long show, but should be fun.
Okay.
All right, on this week's show, we've got a talk with former fighters and Buffalo's player Bobby Scales. We're going to look at the long-awaited MVPs and postseason awards, and we're going to examine the free agent market a little bit, hit some notes, and handle some high heat. The bases are loaded, and there's like three guys on deck, so let's start swinging.
Damn, let's get it done.
Clearing the bases!
So on Wednesday, I sat down and chatted with Bobby Scales, who was beyond generous with his pregame time when he was here as a player in 2012 with the Buffaloes in 2012 with the Buffaloes and 2011 with the Fighters. And he's a wonderful speaker, very thoughtful person, engaging. And, you know, he was one of the guys who really wasn't able to put much together in his MPB career. And he alludes to that fact that he really wanted to return to the States when he was through 2 years here, and you'll hear about that in the chat. But he worked for the Angels for a time. He worked just before they landed Shohei Ohtani, so he was there when they were going through all that. He's the minor league field coordinator for the Pittsburgh Pirates right now. And, you know, I really enjoy this time of year when we get to talk to former NPB players. So I hope you enjoy this. Bobby Scales. All right, we're chatting with Bobby Scales, former Fighters player and Buffaloes player from way back in the day, 2011 and 2012. Thank you very much for taking the time this morning to chat with us.
I am very pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's really good seeing you again. We're actually talking on Skype for you guys, you new people, you young people. We're not using WhatsApp, so take that. Anyway, let's talk about your career here. How would you describe it, playing with the Fighters and Buffaloes?
Well, first of all, you know, it was coming to Japan was awesome. It was a test. More mentally than physically. I mean, baseball is baseball to a certain degree, but mentally, it was very difficult in the sense that I was a good player. I could do some things on the field. I was a good hitter. I could run a little bit, fair defender. But the biggest tool that I had and the thing that allowed me as a guy who wasn't a non-prospect to really graduate through the ranks and stick it out so I got to the big leagues and eventually Japan was the fact that I really knew how to play the game. I had, you know, my best tool was my brain, and my second best tool was probably my heart. I wasn't going to be denied. The thing about Japan that was very, very difficult for me, especially the first year, was how much of the game was controlled by the dugout. Everything seemed like everything we did, like, you know, if you saw a guy foul a ball off the other way, you take a couple steps to your, you know, to the offside or whatever side, and you're like, no, you got to stand right there. And I'm like, wait, did you just not see? I mean, I was playing with Darvish. He's throwing 97, 98. And, you know, we got guys beating up the right field line and beating up foul territory down the first base side. And I'm playing second base, and they still want me playing up the middle. I'm like, he's not hitting it there. Like, this guy has no chance of hitting this baseball there, but that's what they wanted. So it was learning to yield, even when you felt like what we were doing was not the right thing. But you're not the manager. You're a player, so you do what you got to do. I remember Mayo Fernandez told me the day I got there. When I reported to Cebu. I was there with the team for a couple of days.
That's Jose Fernandez?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And long story short, I had to go to Korea for a couple of days, and then I could come back. I could be eligible to play. I had to get a visa, what have you. But he told me the first day I got there, he says, hey, man, good to see you here. Yeah, I hope you have a long career here, but just understand everything you know about the game. You see that trash can in the dugout? Take everything you know about the game, put it in that trash can, and leave it there because you got to have an open mind to make it here. And there have been no truer words spoken than that. I tell everybody I encounter, that's either going over there or wants to go over there. My agent, he still, you know, he sends guys to me when he's got clients that are talking about going over there and have opportunities, and I just give them what I got, and I leave them with that every time because it's the truth. So the game is a beautiful game. It's a different kind of game, and you have to be open-minded or else you're not going to make it.
Yep. Yeah, two things you said, you know, the brain and the heart, two things that can't really be measured. So those don't come across in the stat category. So I guess
that's who I was. I was a tweener all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was okay here. I was pretty good there. I could, like I said, I could hit, and I could hit a fastball, and I could run a little bit. But everything else was out. You know, it's kind of in between. So it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. So, you know, when you're that guy, you got to survive.
I got
you. That's how I did it.
I got you. Now, obviously, I've been here a long time. Jim has been here a long time. We've seen an enormous number of players come to Japan and not exactly have the kind of success that they were looking for. So other than the fact that baseball is difficult, and we know that, it's hard to hit, it's hard to pitch, why do you think so many guys come here and fail to find that kind of success that they're looking for?
I think the biggest thing is the mindset. Guys come over and they think they're going to either change the way that the Japanese players or coaches teach, coach, play, think, or they think that what they're doing is, or they look at the experience in Japan not as a vacation, but like as an experience. You're over there to play ball.
Mm.
You're over there to help win. It's not a game. You're not over there to get a check. They've got plenty of money. They can go find somebody else. I think when guys, I love hearing guys say, man, I can't wait, man. When I get towards the end of my career, I'm going to see if somebody's interested so I can go get the experience. No, that's not what it's about. You're over there to play. You're over there to win. And if you go over there with the correct mindset, I think guys have an opportunity to stay for a long time. I wish a lot of things. I wish I got to the big league sooner, but I wish I could have played longer. I turned down, it was time for us to come home for a variety of reasons, but I wish I could have played longer over there.
Okay, well, you know, I hear a lot of guys come over and they evaluate the level and they say, yeah, I mean, some of the guys are pretty good. These guys have good swings. The pitching styles are, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what is the reason that these guys come over here, evaluate the players as lesser than what they've been used to, but then they can't beat them on the field?
I think it's classic underestimation of your opponent. And then when guys wake up, it's too late. You're too deep in the hole.
There's no way to
league.
You can't escape from the hole, though? I mean, if the light comes on or something, or does it just not come on?
I think the key to escaping from the hole is not getting in the hole. And the way you don't get down into that situation is to come over with a humble mindset. Okay. I think that's the biggest thing. Just come over with a humble mindset. Like, look, these guys are pros, man. These guys are legit. Now, I think the thing that keeps NPB from being Major League Baseball is simply the depth. You don't have many really great players. And even some of the great players, because of how their skill set is, would have a tough time making it here. I think you look at a guy like Makita. Makita was a killer over there, and he, you know, he did not fare well here. Part of it was he just didn't have enough fastball. But the guy, you can't deny his track record in Japan. He was a tremendous pitcher. It just didn't fit him. And again, I think the age caught up with him as well. But I think the key is coming over with a very humble mindset. Like, these guys are pros. These guys are very good. Is it the American Major? Is it Major League Baseball? It is not. But it is. It's a half a click below. And I think just the depth of the quality is the only difference between the big leagues over here and NPB.
Okay.
And I don't mean that as a slight at all. I just think that there's a lot of guys that if they come over in their prime could do very well in the major leagues.
Okay. Now you worked for the Los Angeles, jokingly I say, Angels, because they're in Orange County and Anaheim. when they brought in Shohei Ohtani, but you were there when they were looking at him. Okay. Do you have any insights about what they were looking for when they were scouting? Did they come to you and ask you any questions?
I mean, the whole industry was on him. I mean, what he was doing was people don't do that, and he's actually changed the game. There's a lot of teams now are looking at display guys, and it's funny because you have, you know, in the American baseball landscape now, the amateur landscape, you got all these travel teams and select baseball and this, that, and the other, and you've got kids. I had a my neighbor down the street was like, yeah, my son plays on this team, and he's a PO. I'm like, what's a PO? He's like, pitcher only. I go, how old are the Eagles? 11. I go, why? It doesn't make sense. So, I mean, Ohtani really changed the game. I mean, the whole industry was on him. He was incredible. And I'm glad he did. I'm glad he came over. I'm glad he had the success. I'm hoping for the game. Obviously, I'm with the Pirates now. I'm with another team. But I'm hoping for the game, as a fan of the game, that he comes back and is able to pitch and is able to hit, you know, hit the way he was hitting. It's good for the game. And I think it's good to show that guys can do more than just one or the other.
Pitcher only. P.O. Stop it. All right. You know,
11.
Yeah, stop that. I always look at, and I know it's a lot easier now these days because we have internet and we have ways to watch some of the games. But how do these teams evaluate some of the Japanese players? Because it's still hard to navigate some of these sites if you don't speak Japanese and you can't get stats so easily.
Well, I would actually throw that question back to you. I would say, and I would do so in saying, doing what you do as a journalist, you see there's a lot more American scouts. There's a lot more guys who are with, you know, U.S. teams. You have almost full-time coverage of the league now. The Pacific Rim guys are doing an unbelievable job, especially in Japan, because you can't – it's really tough to get amateurs out of Japan. So their main jobs are with amateurs. So just – I would say they're just – you're getting more scouts. You're getting higher level of scouts. You're getting GMs. You're getting assistant GMs over there on a more regular basis. People who have, and I think now too, if I'm not mistaken, the TrackMan data and stuff like that is more readily available for consumption by the U.S. team. So we can get spin rate data, we can get exit velocity data, and all that kind of stuff, which is a big piece of what we're doing in terms of identifying players here now.
All right. Last question now. Now we've got a quartet of Japanese players who are looking to jump to the major leagues this offseason, and you know, quite honestly, I'm not convinced that more than two of them will find jobs, maybe perhaps one of them a full-time job. But how much of those guys do you remember? And, you know, what are some of the hidden issues that these players are going to have to deal with when they run up against major league players?
Well, the only guy I really remember is the center fielder from Akiyama. I remember this kid. I mean, he's not a kid anymore, but when I was over there, I mean, it's 7 years ago now, he was a thorn in our side. He's a good player. Guy could play center field. He could run. Very tough out to play, which is a very common characteristic of the Japanese player. But I don't know the other guys well enough. But this, I wish, and like I said, this, I wish some of these guys would have had the opportunity to come sooner. Because I really think that some of these guys could have absolutely made it in the big leagues had they come over or come sooner. So I wish them all well. I really do. I think it's good for the game to have a broader, more diverse set of players. I will say this. The Japanese player coming to the big leagues is going to be absolutely fundamentally sound. I think that's huge, especially in today's game. You know, you have our game right now is bigger, stronger, faster, throw it harder, hit it further than it's ever been, but I would venture to say that some of the skill is being lost. I don't know that the skill level is as good as it's ever been in the big league. So it's a stereotype, but it's a good one. The Japanese player, they're going to catch the ball. They're going to throw strikes. They're going to do the things right. They're going to play the game the right way because it's demanded of them over there. And to a certain degree, I think we've lost a little of that. I think it's coming back, but we've lost a little of that in our game here stateside. Like I said, I don't know much about a lot of those guys. Akiyama's the only one I really remember. I know that our scouts, you know, with the Pirates, this, you know, spoke about him, and you know, our Pacific Rim guy, they like him. The Pirates aren't really in the market to get many free agents, much less players from Japan. But,
yep.
But our guys do over there; they do their work, and they're diligent about what they do. So. But the hidden things, I think it's the size of the country. If you end up on a big league club, you're going to play in New York. You're going to play a 4-game set in New York. You're going to get on a plane on Sunday night, Monday morning, and you're going to fly to St. Louis. And then you're going to play another 4. And then you're going to get on another flight on Thursday morning. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, you're going to play in San Francisco. And there's nothing to simulate that. When you're moving time zones like that, it's extremely difficult. When I was in the business, I was there with the Cubs, so it was a little bit better because we were in, towards the center of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's still four-hour flight to Los Angeles or San Diego or, foreign some change in San Francisco when you're going up there. So it is difficult to navigate that, to travel. And that's I think that's the biggest thing is the travel. And obviously the culture, the food, the language, it's tough. It's tough when you're in a situation where you want to communicate with your teammates, you want to find out about them, but you always have to go through a third party to do so.
Yeah.
That's hard. So.
Yep, and that's not so hidden. Yeah, all right. So, yeah, we appreciate the time. Thank you very much, and we wish you the best with the Pirates. And, hopefully we'll see you again here sometime in Japan on a visit.
I would love to come over. I need an invite. Somebody bring me over. I'm open.
Okay. You got it. All right, Bobby. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the time.
You got it, John. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again, Bobby, very much for your time and waking up early and chatting with us. That was really fun. Really appreciate it. Jim, what'd you think?
Well, I loved it because I'll tell you what I loved is I'm going to be positive and nice for a change. I really liked it. I loved the question about, why is it that people don't do as, why do people underperform in Japan other than the fact that baseball is hard? And, if you don't, as I've talked about I asked this question to a bunch of people this past year, and it's basically, yeah, baseball is really hard. And if you turn your back on it, if you try to take it easy for a minute,
mm-hmm.
it'll eat you up, it'll eat you up in single A ball. And it's going to do that in Japan. And I think he explained why really, really well. And I thought it was a great question. And the way he explained it, it was really good. Now, I mean, I would pick nits because that's the kind of person I am.
Sure.
Like the one about don't come over here to experience it. But so many people come over here and do well and do say how important the experience was. But I know what he's saying. He's saying, don't come over here. Think it's going to be something that people are going to pay you just to be here. And no one's going to give you extra credit for being a good, for taking an interest in Japanese culture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't take it that way. I think I took it in the vein that when some guys come over here, they think, well, geez, I'm not doing so well in the States, or things are not working the way I want them to work. I'll go to Japan, as an alternative. And he's saying, no, it's very serious competition over here. You're not coming over here as an alternative. You're coming over here to really compete, and it's not going to be easy. And you think the level of competition is whatever you think it is, but when you get here, it's a whole different ball of wax, and you're the one who's melting.
Exactly. Well, I thought that his whole description of it sounded to me like an at bat. And I say that because you don't want to be in a hole. You don't want to, So basically, it's and your question, can you get out of it? Sure, you can get out of being 0-2 in the count. You can still mm-hmm. you can still do what you want 0-2 in the count. But if you look at people, if you take the how productive people are 0-2 in the count and how productive people 1-0 in the 1-0 in the count are, it's a world of difference. And
yeah, you're going from trying to make contact and not strike out to, if you're ahead in the count, to taking an aggressive swing and trying to drive the ball. And getting a
exactly
pitch to hit.
Exactly. So he yes, was, I you know, see. You see, you see. gotta be ready to put yourself in the driver's seat, which means, everything you do, it's not unlike other bits of your daily life. The things that you do that are misinformed or wasted energy or wasted motion are not helping you get where you want to go. So you want to, focus that and do your job and be as good as you can about it. Because I thought that was really good because, just the language he used was very refreshing.
Yes.
And very sharp, very clear. So I really love that. I was listening to it and I'm going, whoa, people got to hear this. That was that was, and in fact, I texted you right when I was listening to it. It blew me away. So I was really happy. And of course, the other thing that I said I was going to try not to be, I was going to be positive about was a kind of a half snark. There was a little half snark slipped in there about
from him or from me.
From you, the bit about
I'm full of snark. It's oozing out of me. I'm trying to
You were trying to keep a cork in it. Well, you need a bigger cork, John. you can't measure heart or brains. Well.
Oh yeah, that was a shot at you.
Yes, I know. I got it. I'm used to that. I'm used to that sort of thing. Like, oh, you stance guys, you can't measure everything. So, I'm used to it. But anyway, moving on. Okay. So, tell me what you enjoyed about that, or other than just talking to Mr. Scales, which is always a pleasure.
So basically, I've got one point to take because I want to move along in this show, but and that's the statement that he made about the bench being in control of so much. And he offered the one example, the instance in which Yu Darvish is on the mound and nobody can pull any of his pitches, and he wants to play toward the middle, and the bench is having him move toward, you know, he played a lot of second base, and he said in that instance he was playing second base, and the guys on the bench want to position him closer to the foul line, and or closer to the middle. And he's like, you know, no ball is going to come this way. I want to go closer to the foul line. If anybody makes contact, it's going to be, you know, maybe shoot through that hole between second and first. And as I've talked about on the show in the past, you know, a lot of times we want, as observers, and I include the media in that group, you know, with fans and anybody who's watching, and we only know the results. We don't always know the plan, and that includes on defense. And sometimes we can see these shifts. We can see the exaggerated shift or extreme shifts, but other times we can't. You know, it's the difference of getting a ball through sometimes in the infield. It can be a couple of steps here, a couple steps there, and a ball shooting through on artificial turf, you know, that probably wouldn't have been a hit on grass or something like that. And so you just start looking at all the results and get caught up in that, and you don't really see the big picture. So I'm really glad he talked about those things or that particular aspect. But and I'm sure there are so many more instances and where Japan is so in control and that the players are not given the opportunity or afforded the opportunity to make that decision on their own. And I mean, we see it in the States too, where coaches are standing near the manager and signaling to outfielders to move this way, that way, come in a little bit more. So, I mean, it happens there, but the way Bobby made it sound, and this is years ago, obviously, but that Japan is even more in control of those situations. So,
I think it is more. I think it's more in control now than it was when he was playing here.
Yeah, I would imagine it is. I don't think that would go, especially with the amount of young players we've seen come in. You know, they've got to be telling them where to stand, how to stand. Don't slump over, stand up straight, kid. You know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I really enjoyed talking to Bobby, and we had a good time when he was here. He was so enlightening when he was here. I wish we could have talked to him more, but it was so fun to actually talk to him. And he's a Michigan guy. I did not know he's a Michigan grad, and I was wearing a Michigan shirt when I talked to him. So he said, hey, my wife and I both went to Michigan. And I said, hey, my dad did his graduate work there at Michigan, so we used to live there. So we did talk about that stuff before we started the chat. But let's move along. We had finally our MVP awards that were given out. So let's make a four-seam transition and talk about that night. That was early in the week. Was it Tuesday this past week? Everything is starting
Tuesday
to run together. So in the Central League, as most of you know, Hayato Sakamoto of the Giants was awarded the MVP honor. And in the Pacific League, it was Tomoya Mori, the catcher for the Seibu Lions. And I guess they got it right. I'm fine with both of these particular guys. you know, Maury was not my pick, but I didn't think it was some egregious selection that would send my head, you know, doing a, yeah, an Exorcist style spin. That didn't happen this year, so I'm glad.
One surprise was I have to write new rules for how to vote for the MVPs because somebody broke my old rules are broken, which was somebody somewhere has to cast a vote for Naoyuki Miyanishi. He didn't get a vote this year. Oh. What's up with that? Somebody was not following Jim's rules. Can't have that.
I think you have to write them in English and in Japanese and tweet them out, you know, numerous times. You know, do your in case you missed it tags.
You'd be
on
surprised to some of the people who retweeted that one a year ago.
Yeah, well. So I thought Sakamoto was going to win early on, and I think we talked about the fact that he had the career high 40 home runs and played in every game. He was really good, even though he was getting some pregame work that he hadn't had to get before. But when you hit 30, that happens. So, and again, my guy in this Pacific League was Takeya Nakamura. I don't think he had a bad season. I don't think he had a great season, but I do think he had a really productive and valuable season for that team. And his production certainly helped that team come back and win the championship in the Pacific League because they weren't leading the whole time and they had to rally to get back. But, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys. And I think you could have thrown in Kodai Senga of SoftBank just because I usually normally don't talk for pitchers. I don't stump for them. They have their own award, but I thought he was pretty valuable to that team. But yeah, okay. I mean, Morty didn't do anything except win a batting title. I think, you know, had he not won the batting title.
He didn't do anything except win a batting title?
Well, I mean, in the eyes. Now, listen, I'm trying to read the tea leaves among the Japanese media. Had he not won the batting title as a catcher, when he became only the fourth catcher to win a batting title.
Yeah.
I didn't see
anybody talking about, oddly enough. So. Yeah.
Okay. But I don't think.
Like I expected him to.
Yeah. Let's say he hits close to 320 but doesn't win the batting title. I don't know that he gets this honor from the Japanese media because they just look at the easy numbers. So whatever is laziest, whatever is right there most obvious are the numbers that they take. And you know, I'm deeper and more complex than that. And that's part of the reason I liked Takeya Nakamura. I think I told you before that, you know, he led NBP in run scoring hits or timely hits, as we like to talk about them. He was the RBI leader. You know, I think he batted cleanup for that team, and I think that says a lot. But I'm fine with Morty being the MVP. I don't think they got it necessarily wrong this year.
No, I don't think so. I think Morty was really a slam dunk. I don't think anybody, you know, I think in the Central League, and a lot of people questioned my voting for Hayato Sakamoto ahead of Seiya Suzuki. And I'll be honest, in terms of what they did on the field, Suzuki was, I think, fairly obviously a more valuable player. But having said that, part of the goal is winning a championship. So I like it, you know, I like to give, you know, a little extra credit for people who win championships. And so that was probably the big one. But I don't know if that's the way it should be, but that's the way I see it. I don't want to say that's the way it should be because everybody, you know, that's one of the wonderful things about this is there's a lot of disagreement about wonderful. what goes into the pie.
Right.
I had in the Pacific League, I had Mori first and Masataka Yoshida second and Hotaka Yamakawa third, and Nakamura was my fourth most valuable player in the Pacific League. I mean, not even really close. And this is a guy who had more defensive value according to my system, than more at third base as not a really good third baseman than a catcher. But Maury's batting was significantly more valuable than anybody, by my reckoning, was significantly more valuable than anybody in NPB. Just the batting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Maury, I think he only threw out about 28% of runners, and that was worst in the Pacific League, and he had 12 pass balls.
Yeah,
he's the only catcher in NPB with double digits in pass balls, but he's only 24 and there's room to grow. But I mean, yeah, if you look
at
his
catching, about that. I mean, defense was terrible. Defense was terrible. Sorry, Lions guys, but it's true. I mean, his defense was terrible, but having said that, it says a lot that, you know, he's terrible, but he's good enough to play the position. You know, he didn't get eaten alive at home plate. He didn't get eaten alive at catcher, which is, I know that every time I open my mouth about Maury, somebody wants to, you know, stick sharp objects in there.
Well,
but
they should not practice on themselves first.
Yeah, well, one can only dream. But the point being, and I've talked with some Lions fans about this, and it's, you know, he's being an adequate catcher for a championship team is a valuable thing, and in that sense there's value then. And then I'll be honest, during the season I didn't see Maury as a I didn't have run my numbers all together. I wasn't looking at the big picture. I wasn't doing a deep analysis. So I looked at, okay, he's going to win a batting championship and he's going to win the MVP because he's the batting champion, as you said. And I thought that was going to be the thing. But my whole numbers, you know, you actually look at the value of all the things he did, and primarily what he did was he didn't make outs, which is the value of hitting for average, is you don't make outs. And he drew a lot of walk. He was on base like crazy. He had power. And those two things are really the thing. I mean, Nakamura did not create as many runs, and he made more outs. So it's really hard to catch up. And then, of course, because they play on the same team, then, you know, the other things are all equal. You know, you don't have to argue about, which team was the luckier team or this or that or whose defense was better and
or
whatnot.
Or whose teammates were worse or all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and his, you know, on the roles on the team. But I think it is big. Now, Nakamura, I think... Nakamura had a bigger impact on people's, I think he had a larger impact on people's, what's the word I'm looking for? He made a bigger impression because he was so good in the second half. He was okay in the first half, but what happened is that in the second half, he went through a stretch when they were making their pennant run.
Mm-hmm.
After the All-Star break, when he was just almost impossible to get out. And this, I think, that overshadows the fact that he was fairly useless in much of the first half.
Well, now now you're saying useless. So,
well, okay, I mean, relatively, you know, but I'm just saying that he was very inconsistent. But what happens is when people are inconsistent, people tend to overlook that, you know, they give more value to the last thing they see. You know,
certainly,
I mean, it's just the way we're wired.
Well, but
if you don't give extra weight to, you know, game A or game B, it's really hard to conclude that he was a superior player. But that's just me. That's just me talking. And some others, but that's okay.
And some others, but if you look at the team and the way it came back, it did make that comeback in the second half, and that coincides directly with his more productive half of the season.
Well, yeah,
he wasn't productive the whole season or the entire season in every at bat, but he did do a lot to propel them in that comeback. But
a famous...
so did Morty. I mean, you know,
exactly.
Hard to
Morty
separate what they did.
Was you know, I'll have to look at it, but it, I wouldn't be, you know, there was a story once, a columnist for the Mainichi. This is when I was writing my, just beginning my Japanese baseball guides 27 years ago. And he wrote that Doug Jennings deserved to be the MVP of the 1994 Oryx, the Pacific League in 1994 for the Oryx Blue Wave, because he had a better second half than Ichiro Suzuki.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
Okay, yeah. So the only problem with that is, and which I had to argue, yes, you're right. The only problem with that argument is that Jennings was an up and down role player in the first half, not necessarily his fault that he didn't get playing time. But Suzuki's first half was vastly more valuable than either of those two players' second half.
Right.
You know, so it's like, but this guy was basically enamored of the fact that, well, when they won the pennant, this guy was the big player. You know, that's the NBA thing. Okay, well, you know, what did he do on the, you know, he may have scored 50 points, but he was, he only scored two in the fourth quarter when they lost.
Yes, yes. All right, well, yeah, we're all good. Okay. I mean, I'm fine with, you know, I don't think they, like I said, they had some horrible head spinning.
No, this wasn't
this year, so we're good.
Yeah, I mean, no, this I wasn't the pitcher who wins 10 games because nobody else had a big year, or, you know, the guy who, I don't know what. Yeah, but we have those years when the guy on the pennant winning team, when nobody stands out on the pennant winning team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they pick somebody like, you know, they pick Naoyuki Miyanishi, because I got to get his name out there.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, let's move along to the best Niners. And I didn't have
Niners.
Too much trouble.
I like that.
The best Niners. Yeah.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
In the Pacific League, wrong sport. In the Pacific League, Kodai Senga, the pitcher. Let's just go through them really quickly. There were five Lions, and that made a lot of sense. So Kodai Senga at pitcher with the Hawks, then Mori, the catcher for the Seibu Lions, Hotaka Yamakawa, first base, former Lion, or someone who is still had Lion blue on his skin that he was trying to wash off. Keito Asamura, who went to the Eagles this past offseason, so it spent 2019 in Sendai. He wins at second base. Then Nakamura at third, Sosuke Genda at short, Shogo Akiyama in the outfield, all from the Lions. Then the Oryx Buffaloes, Masasaka Yoshida, and Lotte Marines, Takashi Ogino, who I was so thrilled for, and I did watch the ceremony. It was on YouTube, so I was able to watch that, and they did talk to him, and he just seemed like he was so tight up there answering questions, you know, why am I up here? You know, I just got through my first full season in forever, and here I am standing up here with all these guys. Yeah, and I'm standing up here with all these studs, and you're talking to me? What are you doing? You know, and it was really cool. It was a cool.
Yeah, that was a weird. The outfield for the PL race was weird. In fact, you know, all the PL votes, there weren't the closest vote was, in my mind, the one they got the most wrong.
Well, I didn't get to
DH. Which is not a surprise.
Yeah, DH was Alfredo Despaigne, SoftBank. And
yep, sorry.
No, that's no problem. And so, yeah, I was just wondering, because I think when we talked about our MVPs midseason or midseason-ish, I think it was August, you had talked about Yurisbel Gracial of the Hawks being up there. And you got to wonder why he wasn't a popular pick at all. But you look at that outfield and you have to wonder who gets bumped out of there to get him in. It's a very tough position.
Oh, in my mind, Akiyama.
Well, yeah, but I don't think certainly that's the first one. I think you go, your eyes go there, but he had a decent year.
Yeah, so, it was okay.
And he's okay defensively. I think he's better than Gracial. So, I mean, how do you go about making that? I mean, it's not that easy. I don't think you just say, oh yeah, let's take this guy, because I don't think you get a, I don't think it's a consensus pick. You might get some people say that Ogino's offense wasn't what it could have been. I don't know. And I know he batted well.
Yeah, he had a good, I mean, he had, for him, he had a remarkable season, but Oh, I don't know. I don't think. I think I had Gracial in there actually, but I, you know, in retrospect, I probably wouldn't have. I had Jabari Blosh. I think got really the short end of that stick. I would have preferred having Blosh in there instead of Akiyama.
Yeah, and what about Zach Neale for pitcher?
That's a hard one because
he only lost one game.
That's a hard one because I think that's the case of, well, who would you rather have to pitch? Who was actually a better pitcher? I mean, yeah, well, he lost one game, but yeah, well, okay.
No. I'm not saying maybe for the award, but I looked at the voting. He wasn't even considered.
Well, I think for him, for a pitcher like Zach Neale, to finish fourth in a vote with Kodai Senga, Kohei Arihara, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, three guys who had really good seasons. Although Arihara was I guarantee you, if Arihara had had his first half and the second half, he would have been the best. He would have won the best nine award. If he'd flipped those around, people would have said, wow, what a great second half he was. He really came on so strong instead of starting strong and finishing poorly.
That's true.
But that's Zach Neale to finish fourth in that group, I think that's really good. I mean,
He only lost one game. And his ERA was in the twos just like the rest of those guys.
I mean,
I just don't think it was that.
But he also basically pitched half a season.
Well, okay. Well, okay. I would say three quarters of a season, huh?
Okay. So two thirds of a season, whatever. But yeah. Okay. The ones that I was referring to as being the worst vote was, now in my infield, I would have had three Lions and one Eagle, but in my mind, they got it wrong. I would have had Shuta Tonosaki as the best nine and Gold Glove second baseman.
I would too, and I keep talking about how he gets overlooked and how terrific a player he is, and yeah, I was kind of disappointed at that, but he didn't have some of the numbers that are required, but I think part of that, he had a good season.
He had a tremendous
good
season, but you know what?
You know what? I'll tell you what it is, exactly what it is. It's just
tell
like
me
in
exactly
high
what it is, John.
It's just
educate
like in
us.
High school. Okay, it's just like in high school. Some of the cheerleaders start to hang out together, and we all know the cheerleaders are the best, the best personalities, the most beautiful girls. And there's a girl who's really, really hot, but she's just not as hot as the other ones. The other guys, the other people in this group have sexier bodies and all the other stuff. But if this girl on her own was out there, she'd be, everybody'd say she's a nine, she's a nine and a half. But because she's hanging out with tens, she gets overlooked. And that's what's happening here.
Okay.
At least
in
my high school.
I don't quite know how to follow that argument, but I'll give it a shot. I think it's just that first of all, I want to say Asamura had his best year defensively at second base, and he won a Golden Glove, which I didn't think was deserved, but he did have a really good year at second base. He's getting better at it.
Okay.
And he got the big RBI numbers, which he gets. And so, yeah, 2-2 is that's him. And then he won the award last year. So, yeah, why not? I think that's partly. He won the award last year. Let's give it to him this year. Fine. But my Eagles guy would have been Egor Omogi. Because I just, when I voted, if I go back and look at my numbers, I'm not certain that, yeah, I did have him ahead of, of Genda this year. So that was when I voted. I didn't have my numbers, but I did have access to WAR, but I'm not a big fan. But yeah, I had Mogi better, and Mogi had for him an outstanding defensive year. Yeah, okay, still wasn't Genda, but he had a really, really good year, and his offense was much more valuable in my mind.
And I think Kenta Imamiya of the Hawks gets overlooked a little bit here too. But
well, Yeah, he gets overlooked because one of the things is, unless you are the guy, but it's not even that. One of the things you see a lot, especially in the best nine voting, is if you're not playing 130 games, you're pretty much crossed off the list. And this happened to Yuki Inagita. I think it was in 2016, mm-hmm. when he missed about 18 games.
Okay.
But he still led the league in on-base percentage and slugging average. But because he missed 18 games at the end of the season, actually, I'm thinking it was 2016, and the Hawks didn't win the pennant. He got, you know, he was easily, I won't say he was the best player in NPB that year, but he was close to being the best player. We had a bunch of guys who were about even, Inagita and Shohei Ohtani, and I forget who else off the top of my head, but they were all really close. And the fact that here's a guy who's easily the best player in the Pacific League year in and year out, and he's written off because he doesn't have an MVP season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. So that's the games played. And I think people look at it and goes, no, I kind of hold him to a higher standard. You know, he gets held to a higher standard than other people, or people who have MVPs get held to a higher standard, maybe. But I think the games played really affects people here. And I think that's really what got to Imamiya, is that he pretty much was limited to playing in a half a season.
Okay.
But he is a tremendous, I so agree with you. He was a good player 3 years ago. And I think if mm-hmm. he's healthy, he's the best shortstop. He's the best player at that position in Japan.
Yep. Yep. All right. You ready to move to the Central League?
Yep.
Okay. So at pitcher was Shun Yamaguchi of the Giants. Catcher was Aizawa. We've mentioned him earlier on the show. Dion Viciato of the Dragons was the first baseman. Tetsuto Yamada at second. Shuhei Takahashi of the Dragons was the pick for third base. Sakamoto at short. Seiya Suzuki in the outfield with Yoshihiro Maru of the Giants. And Neftali Soto of
yep.
the Bay Stars. So what did you think about this vote?
I liked it. I liked it really all across the board. There isn't a guy on that vote. Now in the pitcher, Yamaguchi won the vote over Imanaga 274-10, but tough, you know, tough. Yamaguchi just had a year out of, again, some of the voting here is a guy who has a year out of context with the rest of his career. Mm-hmm. Not that it was undeserved. I mean, Yamaguchi had a great year because people, he was able to throw his forkball, really locate his pitches this year and throw his forkball with two strikes and nobody was able to hit it. So, yeah, good for him. Whether, you know, that speaks to long-term value, I don't care, but this year he was just tremendous and more credit to him. The big question, go ahead.
I had one interesting aspect that I liked about the voting was Neftali Soto was second in the voting at second base,
mm-hmm.
but he only got 20 votes.
Yeah,
and,
wow.
And he was third in the voting in the outfield, you know, significantly behind Maru, but also significantly ahead of Yohei Oshima of the Dragons. So I just thought it was very interesting voting in that respect. Maybe if he'd have, you know, he's the double crown winner of the Central League. Maybe if they would have realized what they were doing, they would have voted him higher in the MVP race, but they didn't realize what they were doing. If they valued him that much at, you know, second base in the outfield.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why didn't they value him in the MVP race?
I mean, some of the listeners know, I have, my rule is if you get a vote for MVP,
you better be the best player at your position.
Well, Unless there's a guy who gets a, you know, if the guy's first and second are playing the same position, then the guy who's first is going to win the best nine. But yeah, I don't give out best nine votes as consolation prizes. So, but other people do, you know, oh, somebody else. But Soto, yeah, you know, the MVP vote is what it is. But the best nine, I thought that was really good. In fact, the Central League, I had pretty much right. I think everyone was really good. I'm glad Okamoto got the votes. I'm glad that Soto got the votes, that he was in the outfield. I'm glad that Vigieto won at first base. I thought he was a slam dunk. Aizawa is a case similar to Nakamura and Mori in the sense that he just... I was having this discussion with a Hanshin Tigers blogger, and he said, you know, why this Umeno's defense is so much better, except in general, but this year it wasn't so much better because Aizawa had a good, you know, his defensive metrics were very good this year, better than normal. And his offense was off the charts this year. And the other thing is, you know, part of the argument was, well, Aizawa didn't hit as many home runs, or Umeda didn't hit as many home runs, but he also played in Koshien. But I have to tell you, the effect of playing at Koshien is really not that big on the home run total. It's like 3%, meaning if you're going to hit, let's say, if all the neutral parks you hit in and you're a 40 home run hitter, it's going to cost you 3% of 40, which is one home run, playing your games in Koshien, because you also play games in Jingu and Tokyo Dome and wherever, and Yokohama. So it's not a big deal. And Umeno had, you know, Aizawa basically homered twice as often as Umeno did, and he made fewer outs. So that's pretty much the argument there. Not that Umeno is not a terrific player, because I think he is, and I love him as a base runner too, because he's just fearless on the bases. But yeah. Aizawa had a better year, in my opinion. But I was glad to see that the vote. You know, it's weird, because I think Aizawa was easily the better player. Are obviously the better player. Not a lot better, but obviously.
Uh-huh.
When Aizawa won the vote 167 to 122, and that's about where I see those two guys' seasons, maybe even closer than that. So when I see that kind of grouping, I think, ah, that's about right.
Okay.
It's fair that a lot of people thought Umeno was the best player, the best catcher in the Central League. And,
yeah,
and that's
I
credit to him.
Them. Yeah, I was
okay.
Among them.
And credit to him, credit to Umeno for getting that, you know, for creating that perception.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he did. He has. Whether it's, you know, the way he catches, the defensive part, or the offense. But I thought he was a little bit closer. But you know, you take a better look at the numbers, and you know, Aizawa, he was so. He became a team leader, especially with the bat, and I just like what he did. So he had a good season.
I just about choked during the Premier 12. One, you know, the announcers basically have to say good things about everybody.
Correct.
You know, it's like, oh, and what a good defender he is. Well, Aizawa was a good defender this year, like Tomoya Mori was last year, because last year Mori had a really good record against base stealers.
Uh-huh.
And this year he didn't?
Right, no.
Does that make him a good defender last year and a bad defender this year? I don't know, but Aizawa was not terrible, whereas last year he was. So for the guy to say he's a good defender is a little different from saying he had good defensive numbers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go as far as to say Aizawa is really a good defensive catcher. But he did have good defensive numbers, so give him credit for that.
Okay. And, you know, I liked Kazuma Okamoto. I thought maybe if you look at the defensive aspect of the game too, and I thought he might have been a better choice. But I guess Takahashi was really good with the bat. He carried a lot of the responsibility for the Dragons for part of the season, but he was injured and he missed some games.
Yeah, that was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, usually that costs you. He played 117 games, and I thought that was going to cost him, and it didn't seem to.
Yeah, but I liked him. I thought he was a good pick, but Okamoto had a really good season, and I think Okamoto
played every game. Yeah,
but he also played first base, and he also played left field, and you know I don't know. There's always a couple of guys in there. Of course, Yurisbel Graciel, I thought was, and Jabari Blash getting 6 votes.
Shocking.
In the Pacific League is embarrassingly bad. He's not quick and he takes big strides and, you know, he'll do this and he'll do that, but he didn't kill him. You know, the argument for him is he was the Eagles' best hitter. Okay. And their other best hitter got a best 9. Okay. One of them's a second base, good defensive second baseman. I'm with you. But 6 votes? Come on. Eagles voters, you got Hiroaki Shimauchi, 6 votes. Eagles beat writers, you got to do better.
Yeah, right.
you just got to do better. I mean,
it's probably not.
The rest of the guys on that list are pretty good. I mean, I guess the surprise is that there was a consensus that were 3 guys worthy of being in the best 9. And no, pretty much nobody else.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the rookies, make a 2-team transition here and talk about them. In the Pacific League, it was Rei Takahashi of SoftBank, and that was an easy choice. But the closest gap in Rookie of the Year voting since 2000 featured Munetaka Murakami of Yakult and Koji Chikamoto of Hanshin. And I kept saying all year that these guys are going to create a lot of angst and consternation among media members, and that it was going to be a very difficult choice, but they picked Murakami. And I said before, I think on the previous show, that I thought Chikamoto overall had the better season, but Murakami hit .231, had 36 home runs, 96 RBIs, first player straight out of high school, although it was his second season, so he was he went as far as high school in his amateur career, and he was the first player to do that and win the honor since Kazuyoshi Tatsunami of Chunichi in 1988. So okay, he came out of high school, he was a sensation in his second year, but you know, he hit half of his home runs at Jingu, and you've historically said on this show even that you can't give guys real credit for long ball achievements at Jingu, where home runs are cheap. But here he is.
Well, you have to take it into account. You know, I mean, I can't say you can't. It's not giving them credit, but you gotta realize where it is.
Oh well, I mean, I'm just repeating your words that you've said on the show. But
sure, that's what I mean. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, I joke sometimes about it, but I mean, yeah. 40 home runs or 38 home runs are still 38 home runs, but you have 36. To realize they're not as valuable at Jingu 36, as 38 home runs would be somewhere else.
36, not 38.
Oh, excuse me. Well, whatever. At one point I thought he hit 40. It doesn't matter whether he hit 38 or 36. It's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it is essentially the same, but I just liked the fact that you could put Chikamoto, he was a top of the order guy. Now, he didn't walk a lot. I think he only walked 30 some odd times, 31 times. But and Murakami walked a lot more, and he hit a lot more home runs. But you know, the thing you talk about not making outs and being a leadoff hitter, I thought that was really important for Chikamoto. Now, he's older, so that's probably, I think, among the voters and the public, they probably took that into account.
But why would anybody care? I think he just got punished.
I don't know why they would care, but I think he just got punished because he doesn't hit for power. But he's such a good defensive player, and
yes,
you know, you calculate all that and look at what he did, I thought he had the better season. And a guy who, struck out a bunch, didn't hit for average much at all, but drove in some runs because, I mean, he drove in himself of those 96 RBIs. He drove in himself more than a third of the time. So was he really, was he really driving in runs? When he wasn't hitting home runs, he wasn't driving in that many runs. But if he did connect, then, again, a place where he hit 18 home runs at Jingu, I didn't count up all the RBIs he generated there. But, I was just kind of disappointed. I thought Chikumoto had the better season, and he was my guy, and he didn't win. So
I think I voted for Chikumoto because I voted for him because I just like the overall package. I think in retrospect, Murakami had a more valuable season. But again, these guys were both really, really good players. I mean,
yeah, it was
as far as making more outs, no, Chikumoto made vastly more outs. So
He hit leadoff. I don't think you can blame him. And he's,
well, that's not an excuse. Team.
And he played at a venue that you also often talk about being, hard.
True. The runs you score
to generate offense. Yeah.
The runs you score at Koshien are more valuable than the runs you score at Jingu because they're harder to come by. That is true.
Yeah, in terms of runs scored, they were pretty close, as I recall. It wasn't that far apart in terms of runs scored, but
Murakami does get a lot of credit for the fact that he was really good with runners on base. He hit most of his home runs with somebody on base. These things all add up. They're little things, but the home runs are just so gosh darn valuable. That's part of the problem. Even though they're home runs at Jingu, they're more valuable than singles. And they're more valuable than singles anywhere. So, but having said that, I still thought when I voted, my opinion was that Chikumoto was the more valuable of the two. And I'm not, if you think, obviously I thought so. So okay. I'm not angry about anybody who thought so. I don't see it that way now. But and of course, if. I don't know which player I'd like to have. Well, I guess that's the answer. Would you prefer to have Chikumoto than Murakami on your team next year?
Well, yeah, because I can put him anywhere in the outfield and I don't have to worry about his defense. Now, Murakami, I thought, was absolutely horrible at third, but it turns out... Murakami was just a bad defensive player.
See him enough to make me think he was like... as quote Bill James, I didn't think he'd been banned from McDonald's because the people were tired of picking up all the fries he dropped. But
he was bad. He was.
But I didn't get that impression. I thought he was. I saw him. Miss a ball here and not get to a ball there. So. But yeah, first base. That's not a big competition. He is limited because he is a first baseman. So there's that. The ability to hit the ball out of the park in today's game is just so much more valuable than pretty much any other skill other than being able to strike out, a dozen guys a game. It's just the way it is. It's not maybe the way I would prefer a game, to be honest. I would prefer a game where... Chikumoto is more valuable because of, a game where speed is more important than it is now, because I think it's more fun. But that's just the way, that's just me.
Definitely. I'm certainly there with you.
Chikumoto is definitely more fun to watch because of all the other things, the little things he does, but he's still a singles hitter who's a good, defensive center fielder.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the guys making... transitions happen. The transition players. So first, Shun Yamaguchi, he I think something that you tweeted about.
Yes, now we can talk about it.
And I think you got into got yourself into a situation, but that's fine. You were right.
In retrospect, they can't change it, so it's fine.
Yeah, so he's going to be the first player posted by the Yomiuri Giants, and it's groundbreaking, history-making, precedent-setting, blah, blah, blah. I just think that they've agreed to post him because he didn't start out in their organization. He came there as a free agent, and he's 30, what, two?
So, yeah, there's some consideration. I mean, they made basically every time the Giants break tradition, they make the excuses are plentiful.
Well, they have plenty.
I mean, when they had to talk, when the then owner of the Giants said he'd release any player who sent his agent to discuss salaries,
right?
And Koji Uehara sent his agent,
right?
Mr. Tsuneo Watanabe said, "Oh, that wasn't his agent. That was just some guy who was his friend."
A buddy, yeah.
Some guy. It was a guy. It was like, it was Rudy.
That's part of his entourage.
Exactly. So the Giants, I mean, they're just really famous for making excuses for their behavior, saying it isn't what it is.
Right.
So the owner of the Giants, also named Yamaguchi, made excuses for why Yamaguchi was posted, and I can pretty much guarantee you that they're not telling you the real story.
Right.
Right. I think there's 100%. I can tell you now that basically all the major league teams knew he was coming. So many of the Japanese people knew he was coming, but it was really a sensitive subject with the Giants, because when I said he's coming, when people were telling me in MLB that he was coming, that the Giants got really hot under the collar and said it was speculation and a rumor. That was 11 days before they proved it wasn't speculation or a rumor, but
right.
I got in hot water because I was right.
Yep. All right. Well, next time when you're right, hit him with the right. So I like to move for Yamaguchi. I guess I don't think he's making this crop of MPB players moving to the majors look any stronger. But I think, remember, I talked about the fact that he's really good at getting guys to chase pitches. So I don't think that's going to be the case in the big leagues. So I'm not really sure how he's going to fare there, but we'll watch. I mean, I'm not sure about any of these guys, so why am I even talking? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to say I don't think he's going to do well is what I'm saying, but I'm not saying. So that's my take on that. But we'll see. I mean, maybe he finds a team in a situation where things can work for him.
Yeah. And it's not because I don't think he can't play, although I did, as I said, his season was out of context with what he's done in the past. But it's just... And I think, you know, when you were talking to Bobby Scales about, oh, I don't think, you know, these guys are going to do anything particular. And I understand that. I kind of waver from point A to point B. But the fact is that the transition is maddeningly difficult.
Oh, definitely.
That. It's not just a case of what you're capable of, but it's what you're capable of and what you're capable of bringing to the table in a really short order in a really unusual environment. At an advanced age.
Yep, there's a lot to deal with.
I think all these guys can play in the majors, but it's. And somebody asked me, I think it was, I can't remember her name. We talked at length for who writes for The Athletic and covers the Toronto Blue Jays for The Athletic. And we talked at length. And I said, I think, you know, Yoshitomo Tsutsugo will do quite well if his team believes in him. If his team is behind him and lets him do his thing and lets him work out through his troubles, which may be really awful and ugly,
okay,
I think he'll do fine.
Yeah.
But if they're not in a position to, you know, to be patient with him, then, you know, it could be lights out before you know it. Anyway, okay. That's that.
All right. Okay. All right, let's talk about the free agents now. There have been, this has been, I mean, we could do a show in this offseason. I think we could do a show twice a week. I mean, because I always joke that we should be doing a podcast every day, but there have been a lot of guys in the news, possible moves, definite moves, guys on the move. So let's start with Daichi Suzuki going to Rakuten as a free agent. I thought that was kind of a surprise. I don't know where he's going to play, if he's going to get every day at bats, but he's a good guy to have on your team, and a guy probably, if he had gone to a different situation, he might be a starter somewhere. I was talking to one of my coworkers the other day, and we just decided to call Oryx Buffaloes. When anybody becomes available, the Oryx team is like the trash can of the NPB group, and that everybody wants to throw players at them and say, oh, hey, we should go to Oryx because he'll be able to play.
When in fact, it's so often, as a friend of mine who was a former Oryx Buffaloes beat writer said, she said, look, you know, as soon as you leave Oryx is when you have a chance to show that you actually can play.
Whoa.
Because there's just this track record of players leaving Oryx who do a lot better. I mean, as soon as pretty much Oryx dumps on you, you know, people say, oh, Oryx is a terrible team and they're dumping on you, but they dump on some pretty good players at Oryx.
Yeah.
Basically, they give up on really good players at Oryx.
That too. All right, so we got Mike Bolsinger, the pitcher for Lotte for 2 years. He is going to be free to join another team, so we'll see where he goes. Shuhei Fukuda turned down that crazy offer from Rakuten, which was good on his part because I think he would have been in another crowded outfield. And he decides to go to Lotte, where I think he has a chance to earn a job, so an everyday job. So we'll see how that goes. The mascot.
Yeah. I think Ikuhiro Kyoto's days are numbered.
Well, they were numbered last year, so they're
indeed. They've always been numbered.
Yeah.
Since 2010, he's always been the guy who's like, man, he could be really good if, well, yeah. Okay.
If well, yeah, ten, yeah, point, ellipses. The mascot, Daisuke Matsuzaka, has been talking to Seibu. Talked to someone who said, yeah, they're going to look for him to bring in some fans, so he's going to find a mascot job with Seibu probably. If they
Does that mean he'll be wearing the Lions' suit? Or?
He probably should be. You know how I feel about mascots. Tsuyoshi Shinjo announced on social media somewhere or on YouTube or something that he's going to try to get back into the game at 47. And his line was, if there's a 1% chance, then that means there's a chance. Wasn't that from Dumb and Dumber?
No, but Shinjo might have a role in Dumb and Dumber 3.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
I don't know. Oh, just cut that out. No, I'm not cutting it out.
That's a great line. I'm with you. I'm with you.
You know, he's an entertaining, he's a really fun player. He's not a particularly good player. I mean, he was a good player in 2004, his first year back with the Fighters. And yes, he was an exciting player. When he first came up with the Tigers. But pretty much he's just a guy who's a big name and a fan favorite and a celebrity. He's a celebrity player.
He's an entertainer. Yes, you are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really want him on my team, but I'm glad that he's leaving Bali behind and going to come and do something interesting this year. So
maybe.
I'm glad of that.
100% chance. Yeah. 47. Yeah. I said before.
Yeah, cool. Don't. Get involved with that guy.
Hey, remember when we started the show? I said, "Hey, you know, I'm 40 something. I can get into shape and give somebody an inning somewhere." So he's got the option. He can pitch too.
All right. I mean, my favorite Shinjo story is when Katsuya Nomura became manager, and he said, "Like you, the way you're hitting, the way your whole attitude, just stay on the farm. We might use you as a pitcher." And you know what? Shinjo got his stuff worked out and became a productive player for Nomura.
Right.
Because he was the first man, you know, he was the first manager who successfully told him, basically, your name is bigger than your performance.
Right.
You know, fix that.
Let's make it match. Exactly.
The other manager who told him that got into a shouting war with Shinjo's mother.
Nice. All right, wow. Well, we'll save that story for another day. Vladimir Coco Ballantyne looks like he's going to be with the Hawks as a backup DH in the near future, but he's definitely leaving the Yakult Swallows.
Mm-hmm.
Pierce Johnson and Rafael Doles are out of the Tigers' cage. But
Or not.
There's a path for Doles to return,
right?
I read. But he's out of the cage for now, so we'll see how that goes. Jody Rodriguez leaving the Dragons. Ouch. And Junichi is bringing in Alonzo Powell as a coach, and he'll work with the farm and the top team players. And I already talked to him. We had a phone conversation the other day. And
oh, nice.
I'm trying to line up getting him on the show sometime after the winter meetings, which are coming up next week and which you are attending. So
I am.
We'll expect you to get us an interview from that next week. Justin Bohr, former Angels slugger. Looks like he's going to join the Tigers, so that looks like that's just about. They have an agreement. I read.
Yeah, they've reached an agreement. Yep.
So he should be here, but we'll see how that plays out for the Tigers. So those are some of the situations. And you also said, you also told me before we started taping that Lee Jong-bom, South Korean superstar in the 90s, is also going to coach with the Dragons.
Yeah, he is going to be in some capacity. He basically had a great career in Korea, came to Japan, and then went back to Korea and had a second great career.
Yeah.
So that will be good. And what else among those little notes? Pierce Johnson. Pierce Johnson and Jolly Rodriguez, interesting because they were pretty much 1-2 as the two best middle relievers in the Central League this year.
Right.
According to the Dragons, Jolly Rodriguez's agent says his priority is getting a major league contract.
Okay.
Which we're going to miss because he was a delightful guest on our podcast.
Oh, but he was a good pitcher for the Dragons. I mean,
and he was too. And Pierce Johnson, same, a delightful guy, but a really good pitcher. Both of these guys were really, just remarkably effective. And certainly other teams would want him, but I've also had people tell me that he is his 1 year in Japan is probably enough because there's probably going to be enough demand for him in MLB this year. So,
is that Rodriguez you're talking about?
Both of them.
Both of them. Yeah,
Pierce Johnson as well.
Yeah, I would imagine Rodriguez, a left-hander who can throw that hard. So yeah, definitely. So those are just some of the situations with teams and players. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one came to us via Twitter. It's from Kaori Kobayashi on Twitter. And after an exchange, she wondered why Jim and I were doing the podcast. And she said, I'm very curious as to what made you guys start doing a podcast on NPB. So Jim has published books and blah, blah, blah. Jim, what made
you? Well, because you asked me to. and I tried, and I just, you, and not only, of course, John's really good at this, is that not only did he ask me to, but if it had been my idea, I would have asked John once and he would have gone, oh, let me think about it. And then when he never got back to me, I would have just given up. But that's not John. John, he's got an idea.
Yeah,
he's like, when are we going to do that podcast? You know, we really, really ought to do the podcast. We ought to do the podcast. And I was like going, no, you ought to like get a different idea. But John was ahead of the curve on that compared to me. So more power to him. So that's why I'm doing the podcast. This is John wouldn't let it go like I would have.
Yeah, I think your portrayal of me is a little bit off, but that's all right. Had the roles been switched, I think I would have been able to outrun you. But you were not able to outrun me, so that's why we're doing the podcast. Now, Jim had published books, and I have been covering NPB since 1995 in Nagoya, and I joined the sports desk at the Daily Yomiuri in 2005, and Jim and I both covered games about, I would say, 3 to 4 a week.
Well, yeah, we used to split them 3 games a week for a long time back in the salad days.
Yeah. And but there were days that we worked in the office together, and we had some discussions / debates. And I always thought that they would make for interesting discussion. And then the idea came to me to do it, to tape those and get them on the internet. And then I had a consult with Michael Westbay of the JapaneseBaseball.com website. And here we are, almost 10 years into it. And
which makes it
still here.
Yeah, 10 years. That almost sounds 10 long.
Years. That almost sounds long. Well, yeah, don't divide the number of years you've been here by 10. That would make it seem
those
short.
Are gym years. You know, we have dog years and gym years.
So, yeah, so we both had experience in NPB, and we just wanted to help spread the word about NPB because it is a great brand of baseball, and we really enjoy it. That's number one.
What happened to the one about we're going to be millionaires?
Well, we're still working on that.
Oh, okay, good. I keep forgetting about that one, but I want to remember that one. Okay.
Well, yeah, somebody's got to go out there and call the sales department. This is production.
I think we fired all those people. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Cody, for the question. And the next one comes from Glenn in Tokyo via email. And he says, the next time you both get the chance to peel yourselves off the beach and put down the fancy off-season drinks with the mini umbrellas, could I ask you to explain the whole contract change and then press conference thing that happens in Japan every year? I always wonder, A, why is it public? B, how are teams able to change the financial conditions of the players' contracts? And C, has anyone ever challenged the clubs on the logic behind a drop in pay? Yes. NPB or bust? Says
the answer is yes to all of those. Okay.
No, it isn't.
Okay. Why is it public? Because I think because the media demands it. And as I've said and I've written regularly, NPB does not have multi-year contracts. NPB runs on single-year contracts. Now, players have multi-year contracts with teams that are essentially personal service contracts. They make a side agreement to play for the team for X number of years. And now, those can be fixed terms. They can be flexible terms. You know, the most common one is somebody will accept this amount of money for year A, this amount of money for year B, and this amount of money for year C. But sometimes they're flexible. I believe Shinosuke Abe's contract with the Giants, his last big, I think he had a five-year contract. It was very flexible. And when he was the MVP award, he got a lot. And then one year he actually got a pay cut, which was very rare for somebody with a multi-year contract. But primarily, usually what happens is the media reports, oh, he re-signed for the same amount, like it's news. But it's just a media opportunity that the teams manage and the media plays along. So that's why they have the press conferences every year. Now, I think that explains how teams can change the contracts, is that generally the teams have some leeway, and if they have multi-year contracts, that can come into it. Now, the other one is, do people ever protest the system? And the answer is yes. Some players are upset with their pay offers from the teams and have gone to arbitration. I can think of three players. I can think of two players offhand. One was Yutaka Takagi. I think he was the first one. That was about 30 years ago. Mm. He's now an analyst. The most recent one was Hideaki Wakui. And long story short, he won his arbitration case basically because then Commissioner Yozo Kato brought in independent third-party people to evaluate the arbitration.
Okay.
And the owners were
livid.
Niffed. Okay, let's say they were aggravated. And I think that hastened Mr. Kato's that hastened the move for a coup d'etat to get rid of him.
Okay.
Okay. Now, So the other thing that happens is there is a rule in NPB that says players whose salaries, whose last year's salary was is under 100 million yen, only have to accept a pay cut up to 25%. And what I mean by that, what I mean by that is if you give them more, they can opt out and become a free agent.
Okay.
This happens.
I didn't know they could opt out, but
yeah, this happened to last. Okay, now if it's more, if their salary the previous year is 100 million yen or above, teams are allowed to give them up to a 40% pay cut. And this, I guess, the most recent case of that was Chihiro Kaneko. He had a big 4-year contract. The last year he was pretty useless, and Oryx wanted to give him a big pay cut off of his previously guaranteed contract, and he said, "Not on your Nelly," and went and was a free agent and signed with the Nippon Ham Fighters.
Okay.
So that's that.
And so, yeah, in response to other people challenging, I remember vividly Yoshio Itoi making a face of disgust as he signed his contract in 2012 with the Nippon Ham Fighters after a number of negotiating sessions with the team, and making this face of disgust as he signed it. And the next day he was traded to what we just referred to as the trash can of NPB, the Oryx Buffaloes.
Yeah, that
so
was a good one.
That's what you get sometimes for challenging. But my first impression when I learned about this situation and the contract situation with that is that it totally makes sense. You shouldn't be paid. You shouldn't be paid for what you might do. You should be paid for what you've done and moving forward. So it's difficult. I don't think this system would work in the States, because if you have guys out there looking to reach goals, personal goals, then I think that would actually take over. But in Japan, it totally makes sense because of the hierarchy system, because of the respect that the young players have for the older players, and how everything is run, and how you have the senior player and the junior player kind of situation there, that everybody can stay in line.
If NPB were like MLB, every player until they were free agents, because there's no arbitration right in Japan technically, every player until they're 9-year free agents would get paid 10 million yen. Because I take that back. I think it's 13 million yen now is the first team minimum.
Oh, yeah.
So if this were MLB, but, you know, one of the things that people don't get, and I understand why they don't get it, because it's alien. It's just so radically different. You know, posting players. We'll let you go to the majors, even though we get nothing for it. We're going to let one of our best players leave, basically for nothing, because he wants to go, and we respect what he's done. Can you imagine an MLB? I know they do that on occasion, but it's so rare. And in Japan, it's so common.
Right, right.
But teams treat, to a degree, teams treat the players like human beings here, and not you know, chattel.
And that's
refreshing to it. You know, that in some sense it's refreshing. And I kind of like that. Even if it's not like the most professional, cold professional way to do it.
Yeah.
But so I mean, in Japan, you know, if a rookie player has a big year, you know, he could get double his contract. There's the minimum salary is pretty much, you know, it's not something that people get paid.
Yeah, people, like I said.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't really exist.
I like the ability to outperform your contract and then get rewarded for it after the season. Whereas I don't think in the major leagues, a lot of times guys get outperform their contract and then they have to become free agents because they're not going to get that money from that team a lot of times. So yep. I like that aspect. So You know, you get rewarded or you incur a deduction, one or the other, and then you go out and you try to perform, but you do everything within the confines of helping the team win, and everything stays in line. So it works in Japan. So I don't know that it would work anywhere else, or, you know, it definitely wouldn't work in the major leagues, but it works here. All right. Yeah. This has been a long, long show. We thank you for hanging in there and listening all the way to the end. The gym's going to be at the winter meetings. I'm not sure about next week, so we'll figure that out as we go along here. We'll play it by ear. Anyone else who has a question, thank you very much, Glenn. We always appreciate your fine talking points. That was awesome. And Kaori-san, thank you for your first time email, and we look for more questions from you.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send us questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes and possibly in the coming year other places, but definitely iTunes for now. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your off season.
See you at the winter meetings.